Good evening, thank you so much. Last week, we had a chance to begin to learn Yonah in a very targeted way. Last week, we had the chance to zero in on a perek that we often skip over, Perek Beis, and to explore Yonah's tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sort of pick it apart line by line in the context of what comes before, what comes afterwards. Tonight, I want to adopt a different perspective, take a different angle, and use a broad angle lens to look at Yonah as a whole, and to look, to begin again with the same comment that launched us last time, which is the comment of the Beis Yosef. It's in the bottom of the second page, and the Torah in subsequent Shulchan Aruch quote the Braisa that appears in Maseches Megillah, near the very end of Maseches Megillah, that the Haftarah is what the Kriyas HaTorah is, what the Haftarah is, and various Yom Tovim. Thank you so much. And the Braisa goes on to speak about Mincha of Yom HaKippurim. Rashi and Tosfos have a lot to say about why Parshas Arayos is chosen as the laning. Thank you so much. But they are silent on the question of Yonah. And the Beis Yosef adds this line that in terms of the rationale for Yonah, Mafter b'Yonah l'fi she'eshba godel koach ha'tshuva. The greatness, the magnitude of the power of tshuva. So the question is, what is godel koach ha'tshuva? How is it large? How is it great? So I wonder whether perhaps, and that's what I'd love to explore together tonight, is whether it's because you actually see several different profiles in tshuva over the course of the nevuah of Yonah. As we saw last time, the four prakim of Yonah sort of more or less divide into Yonah on the sea, and then Yonah in the sea, and then Yonah in Nineveh, and then Yonah atop Nineveh. Because in the first parak we see the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's initial instructions to Yonah, which he promptly ignores and disobeys. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, go northeast to Nineveh, the capital of Ashur, and instead he heads west into the Mediterranean. The entire back and forth, the storm at sea and the back and forth with the sailors that takes place over the course of the first parak. And the first parak ends with the Yonah being tossed ultimately into the ocean by very unwilling sailors. And the sailors see that miraculously the storm disappears, and their response. That's Parak Aleph. Parak Beis is Yonah in the water, and Yonah in the dug, and the dugga, and his tefillah. That's Yonah in the sea. Yonah in Nineveh is Parak Gimel, where you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs, and Parak Gimel opens the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's second instructions to Yonah. Kum Leichel Nineveh, this time he does. And the response of the people of Nineveh, the people and the king, in Parak Gimel. And finally, Parak Dal is Yonah atop Nineveh, where he retreats to some spot outside the city from which he could observe what's going on, the conversation that Yonah has with HaKadosh Baruch Hu while he's overlooking Nineveh. So that's the four prakim of Yonah. Over the course of the four prakim of Yonah, there are several different individuals or groups who do tshuva. So when you think of the tshuva of Yonah, who do you think of? The tshuva, huh? Nineveh. Who else? Who else does tshuva?
Yonah himself.
And who else?
The sailors.
So let's take it one at a time, because I think there's a lot to be learned from each. We have a couple minutes together now. Let's at least begin to explore each of these three tshuvos. So the course of Parak Aleph, as you said, is the tshuva of Anshei Nineveh. How do we even know they do tshuva? How do we know that they were sinners who needed tshuva? So the Pasuk Hey, Parak Aleph Pasuk Hey, Vayiru Hamalachim, the sailors are very frightened when they see the storm. Vayizaku Eshal Elohav. And they begin to, each one prays to his God. Each one prays to his Avodah Zarah. And so it's clear that they're Ovdi Avodah Zarah. And by the end, Pasuk Tezvav, Parak Aleph, Yisuas Yonah V'itiluhu El Hayam, the penultimate Pasuk, they ultimately, with great dismay, toss Yonah into the sea. Vayamod HaYam Yizapo. And the storm starts. Yiruha Nashim Yiragadol Hashem. They have a great year of Shemayim. Vayizbechu Zevach LaHashem V'yidru Nedarim. they're bringing karbanos and they're making nedarim, which itself is a fascinating sort of a pair of terms, because often we use the term neder to mean a promise to bring a karban. But they already brought the karban. And how are they bringing karbanos on the boat? So Ibn Ezra and others say maybe it means Yizbichu Zevach means when they land, after they landed, when they came off the boat. Or Yizbichu Zevach Lashem, some Rishonim suggests, means that they promised. When they saw that, they immediately promised that they would bring karbanos, which then raises the question: if Yizbichu Zevach was a promise, and that's I believe the Radak points out that that's how the Targum Yonos of New Zealand indicates, Yizbichu Zevach means that they promised that they would bring zvachim, or they would bring karbanos to Rabbeinu Shalom. So what's the vayidru nedarim? So what else are they promising? What else are they promising? So some Rishonim say they must have promised to do other ma'asim tovim. They promised to give tzedakah, and that's often part of the response to a person goes through a crisis, a person goes through a tzar, a person goes through a time of great danger. So part of the response, a big part of the response, has to be hodah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and there are different ways of expressing hodah. The Pesukim in Chumash Vayikra speak about the Karban Toda, and in our time when we have the Beis HaMikdash, Birkas HaGomel serves as a partial Birkas HaGomel. The combination of Birkas HaGomel and Sudos Hoda are the stand-in for the Karban Toda, and then giving Staka is a significant part of the way one gives Hoda for Yeshua. And that's perhaps in part rooted in Vayidru Nedarim. The understanding, the interpretation, the Radak and some others, Vayidru Nedar means they promise to give tzedakah. And the Rashi actually quotes from some of the Midrashim, Vayidru Nedar means they promised to convert, which is remarkable. Now, any way you slice it, clearly the sailors have grown dramatically from turning to Avodah Zarah to turning to Rabbeinu Shalom to bring karbanos and perhaps to becoming Jewish. This is a very clear renouncement. Their avodah zarah, a very clear tshuva, yeah.
How do you know that they gave up their avodah zarah? I mean, very often there's a recognition that there's Hashem who's greater than our gods, but our gods still exist.
Right. You make a good. Harry makes a good point. Syncretism is sort of a blending of different religions, specifically a blending of belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Lahavdil. An embracing of Avodah Zarah is definitely something that the Eliyahu Anavi most famously addresses on top of Har Carmel. I must say, Tem Poschem Hashnei Asi'ipim. You keep hopping back and forth between the two doorsteps. You walk into Shul on Shabbos, you walk into church on Sunday. That's that Eliyahu Anavi says you got to make up your minds, you got to stop. So you're right. We don't know how far they got. According to Rashi's approach, they were ready to go to the finish line. But either way, there seems to have been a tremendous amount of change. There seems to have been a tremendous amount of change. And what's interesting also is that the word the word that opens the pasuk that expresses their tshuva, this closing pasuk in Parak Aleph, "Vayiru'uha Anashim Yirah Gedolos Hashem," so that word already appears two times previously in pasuk Hey and in pasuk Yud. Vayiru hamalachim, vayizaku ish elohav. Ironically, the first time it appears is in the context of demonstrating their entrenchment of the Avodah Zarah. They see it, vayiru, and they're scared. They're scared, and they turn to the Avodah Zarah. Five psukim later, vayiru hanashim yirah gedolah. At this point already, there's a more significant yira. Now, Malbim understands, I mean, they're even more scared because now they understood what the problem was, and it seemed pretty intractable. Now, he tells them, they thought, as the Malbim says, they thought that maybe it's the sea god, maybe it's some minor pagan deity who we could somehow pay off or make good, bribe him. But now he's saying, no, it's Rabbeinu Shalom, and I'm a Navi, and here's why, here's what I did, and here's why we're in trouble. The Malbim says, that's why this is a year of Gedolah. Yirun Hashim Yirah Gedolah. They say, whoa, Mazos Asisa. What have you done? You got to do tshuva. We can't do anything here. There's no one to pay off. We're going to pay off the Rabbeinu Shalom. You got to do tshuva. And they realize they're really, really stuck. But at the same time, what it captures is a little bit more what we anticipate when we hear the word yira. There's already a recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that perhaps is also part of the meaning Yirah Gedolah, is that already this is not just that they were more scared than they were before, but that it's a more elevated type of Yirah. And the truth is, then it steps up to Vayirah Hashem Yirah Gedolah, again that phrase, Es Hashem, where it's very targeted in the Yirah Shamayim, and it expresses itself in as we said, however you understand Vayizbichu Zevach and Vayidru Nedarim. And I think part of what the Psukim in the first paragraph are capturing is the step-by-step process. In other words, that they and that's the way tshuva is usually supposed to unfold. Gemara tells us there are extreme cases. Elazar ben Judaya does a very sudden, dramatic, drastic type of tshuva in the final moments of his life. It turns around at 180 turn from a life full of sin to recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But that's rare. It's rare, and that's not, the Gemara ends. Rabbi Yonasi hears the story and he cries. He says, Yesh kon lom b'sha'achas. Wow. In a single event, this man created his Olam Haba. But that's not what we recommend. That's not the ideal. And his story ends very tragically. But the ideal situation is a gradual tshuva, a step-by-step tshuva, that has a lasting impact. When things are gradual, as we all know, gradual change tends to have much more longevity. And the psukim are allowing us to track that. There was a yira, and if you think some more about the first yira, we're going from Pasuk Hei to Pasuk Yud to Pasuk Tazayin. We think about the first yira in Pasuk Hei, so it's expressed in Avodah Zarah. There doesn't seem to be anything positive about it. It is also, but at the same time, one could say, number one, it's a Yira Sa'onesh. They're certainly afraid of something very practical, and they're expressing in Avodah Zarah, but it's reminiscent a little bit, I think, of the famous opening sketch in the Sefer HaKuzari, where he describes, opens with a religious king of the Khazar tribe, who has this recurring dream where the Malach appears to him in his dream and it says, Kavanascha Ritzuya v'Maasecha Ein Ritzuyim. Your kavana is desirable, but your intent is good, but the way you're acting on that intent is inappropriate. And he understands, he comes to realize that that's a religious question. At first he thinks it means he has to be more ardent about his religion, and then he realizes, no, it means it's good that you're religiously motivated, but you're practicing the wrong religion, and that launches him on a search that ultimately brings him to exploring different religions. Ultimately he lands, he's taken only by the answers that are given to him by the Chaver, by the Talmud Chacham, who's a representative of the Jewish religion. So there's a little bit of that in this first pasuk. Their response to crisis, their response to danger is religious. As a matter of fact, the Malbim points out, he says it's actually a combination. It's what we would call, lahavdil, bitachon and hishtadlus. So the Malbim points out, their response to that yira is, on the one hand, they pray, albeit rachman atzlan, to their avodah zaras, as well as taking practical steps. They try to lighten the boat. They're trying to save themselves what we would call a blend of bitachon and hishadlus. So there's a core to work with. They're religiously motivated. They're trying to blend, turn to the deity together with practically helping themselves. But kavanasim ritzuya, but maaseim ein ritzuyim. They're pointing in the wrong direction. They're reaching out to Avodah Zarah rather than to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then you see, five psukim later, they're beginning to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge. And maybe at that point they haven't yet recognized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is solely in charge, but they realize that dealing with that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is different than dealing with Avodah Zarah. Yira Gedola. And then finally, it's sharpened until there's a Yira Gedola Es Hashem. It is a clarity about the Ribbono Shalom, and they're willing to act on it. Zevach and Neder. And it captures also, I would say, one more sort of pattern here is there's a movement in terms of what the word Yira even itself means. Vayira'u ha-malachim in Pasuk Hei means they're scared of what's happening. Yira sa'onash. By the time you get to Pasuk Tazayin, they're not afraid. frightened of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a Yira's Haromos. The word Yira has taken on its other meaning. There's an awareness, there's an awe, there's a recognition that we're in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a reality in our lives. So over the course of Perek Aleph, we're watching the Malachim, the sailors, go through a gradual process of tshuva, a step by step, and it's sort of from very inchoate, primitive religious leanings towards a really defined, polished awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and from a Yiras HaOnish to Yiras HaRomos. Yeah, question. Sure. Oh, that's fascinating.
And so when they look at it the first time, I just want to suggest maybe they're looking at it from the perspective of sailors, and they're afraid for their ship. And they're, you know, this guy's here, he's causing us a lot of trouble, and they're afraid from an occupational perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's only when they start to look at it as Anashim, as individual perspective, as human, as separate from what their job was,
That's fascinating. As you're saying, it sort of speaks to what we would call work-life balance. At first, they were so wrapped up in just seeing things professionally. It's actually fascinating that you say that. And let me add to, excuse me, let me add to that. it's not often that you see in Tanakh an explicit conversation about career in the way that we have in the 21st century. What's your name? Where are you from? What do you do? But that's actually one of the only places you find that, which, you know, in art, sort of, we meet people, that's standard. It's very rare, I think, in the Tanakh, but you actually have it here. And that those sailors, they say, oh, where are you from? And what do you do? Ma malachtecha. Now, again, some of the Malbim and some others try to explain that maybe you sort of break down the questions they're asking. They're trying to isolate, identify, what do you do wrong? Is it a professional sin? Does it have to do with your hometown? But the fact remains, they lead with you know, what do you do for a living? And it's, you know what you're saying, like they're sort of like stuck, overwhelmed. Their identity is bound up only professionally. Yeah, it's interesting. Even the previous pasuk, v'ha'aniyach yishavah lihishaver, it's presented as the boat was going to break. The boat was going to break. And it's about the boat and the sailors. And you're saying that a part of the growth is that they were able to break out of the Masecha Eim Ritzuyim, that Avodah Zarah perspective, and not that work is Avodah Zarah, but they're also able to expand their perspective in other more subtle ways as well. They're able to be more than merely sailors. Fascinating. Thank you. So I think that's a part of what we're meant to learn from watching the sailors grow are sort of these lessons of what gradual growth could look like, and what it could look like to even a severe achetes of Avodah Zarah, what it could look like to gradually, step by step, and it's initially a Yiras HaOnesh and subsequently a Yiras HaRomos, and you were seeing there gradually growing. There are different events that are happening, negative events, positive events, that are moving them along the way. There's the fright of the storm, and then there's the miracles that they're watching as they keep dipping Yonah into the water. Rashi and others quote in the Malbim points out where it's present in the Psukim, that they initially just dipped him in a little bit, and then the storm stopped, and then they pulled him out, and they dipped him a little more, and the storm stopped. And they realized every time they pull him out, the storm starts again. They came to reckon the only way to end the storm would be to drop him in entirely. So they were seeing negatives, fright, and they were seeing incredible positives, and all of that was part of were among the ingredients that helped them gradually grow. Now, the tshuva of the people of Nineveh, so that's Perek Gimel. Last week we spent time on Perek Beis, and we'll come back to Perek Dalet in a couple of minutes. But to take a look at Perek Gimel, so the most obvious, as you pointed out, Nathan, the most obvious tshuva, the central tshuva, the tshuva that ostensibly this story is all about, the tshuva that Yonah is instructed to obtain, the tshuva of the people of Nineveh. And it's fascinating to watch what happens. So Yonah comes and he delivers a message that he had been hesitant to deliver in Perek Aleph. In Perek Dalet, he comes into the city. And immediately, in Pasuk Hey, they believe him, they believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the people of Nineveh, and there's tzom and sak. There's fasting and there's sackcloth. Now, when it gets to the king of Nineveh in Pasuk Vav, he joins them in that, and he even takes off his royal garb, and he too puts on sack, and he gets into that even more, as he expands that. He sits on the Afer, but then, as one of the only preserved Musar Shmuz in Mishnayos, in the beginning of the second parak of Tanis, the Mishnayos record the official Musar Shmuz that the Rav would give when Jews are fasting for a lack of rain. And it centers around the coming Psukim. The king, unlike the people, the king doesn't just focus on fasting and self-affliction and the sak ve'efer, although he certainly embraces that, but he said, and that's what he talks about in Pasuk Zayin, he authorizes it and makes it official. This is going to be Nineveh policy, everyone needs to fast, and the people and the animals. But then he adds in Pasuk Ches, you got to do tshuva. V'yikru Elokim b'chazka. Daven power, reach out to Kadosh Baruch Hu powerfully, and do tshuva. Yeshuva ish midarko ra'ah, u'min ha'chamas asher b'kapem. Everyone needs to step away from their evil path. Everyone needs to step away from the theft that they're holding on there in their hands. And maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu will have mercy. And in Pasuk Yud, as the Mishnah in the beginning of the second parak of Tana stresses, Vayar Elokim es, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu notice? Not their sock, not their tinus, not the afer, but Vayar Elokim es ma'asehim. Kadosh Baruch Hu sees their actions. Kishavu, they had done tshuva, and that's what flips the switch. So the Mishnah presents tshuva sanshen invei is the paradigmatic tshuva, not just of Nevuas Yonah, but it is the tshuva that's held up as a model to people who are Jews in a different generation struggling with a crisis of drought. Be like the people of Nineveh. Do tshuva, change your actions. Now, what's surprising about that is the following. So following up on that Mishnah, the beginning of the second parak of Tanis, both the Talmud Bavli and Talmud Yerushalmi get involved in analyzing some of the Psukim of Nineveh, particularly of the Psukim of Yonah, particularly about Anshe Nineveh. And they both the Bavli and Yerushalmi focus on the last word in Pasuk Ches, Parak Gimel Pasuk Ches. They do tshuva from their evil path, evil trajectory, and from the theft. But it doesn't just say the theft, the asher b'kapein, which is in their palms. So why so vivid? Why so visual? Theft! What does it matter? What do their palms have to do with it? But the Bavli Yerushalmi raises the same question, but give very opposite answers. Talmud Bavli quotes the Amor Shmuel, who says this is an expression of the depth of their tshuva. They gave everything back. Everything. Even if they had to use their hands to pull apart the house, to take out a piece of lumber that they had stolen, they were doing a marvelous tshuva, magnificent. Yerushalmi takes the other approach. Bekapeya means only if they were caught red-handed. If it was still in their hands, they gave it back. But if they already put it away, they had gone shoplifting this morning, and it was already tucked away before the king's announcement came out, that they weren't giving back. Which is surprising, which is actually shocking. Shocking on two levels. Number one, what's with the... why is that a model to follow? Why is the Zaki in the Mishnah and Tainus saying, oh, be like the people of Nineveh? And forget about the Zaki in the Mishnah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Vayalkim is Masayim. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu? They fooled God? They were fakers, bunch of fakers. What does this mean? How does Rabbi Yochanan and the Yerushalmi say that they did not return 95% of what they had stolen? They only returned what was in their hands. Hashavan. Yeah. Yeah. So I think, So Barah is making an important point. The Yerushalmi, clearly they did something. They did make changes. Otherwise, what's the Vayarkim is Maaseihem? Presumably, the Yerushalmi is saying, and I think beyond the scope of the Shir right now, but I think there's what to be said in terms of the approaches of the Rashi, Rambam, to Tshuva. Presumably, what the Yerushalmi is saying is that they didn't do very much work in terms of fixing yesterday. But Maaseihem for the Yerushalmi presumably means changing tomorrow. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that once this hit, they stopped stealing. They weren't yet ready to fix yesterday's theft. But they stopped going forward. They made a commitment. They're not going to steal any further. And they didn't. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees. This may have taken some time. There were 40 days. So we don't know necessarily that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the decision immediately. This was over the course of time. Over the course of the next couple of weeks, they indeed switched tracks. Yesterday wasn't yet fixed, but tomorrow was better. So for the Yerushalmi, the Tshuva and Sheninveh is also a different aspect of gradualism. What we're meant to learn from Anshei Ninveh is that we shouldn't make the mistake, we should not allow, as Rabbi Friend quoted famously a couple of years ago, we should not allow the perfect to be the enemy of the good. We shouldn't be so hung up on if I haven't fixed everything, then I haven't fixed anything. That's absolutely false. And that's why we hold up Anshei Ninveh as a paradigm. Because here are people who were steeped in chet, so much so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent Yonah to speak to them. And they didn't fix everything right away, but they made substantive change, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded. Don't think that because I can't fix yesterday, sometimes it is frightening, like you're saying. Physically impossible to get that piece of lumber. Not impossible, but difficult to get that piece of lumber. And often emotional barriers are often harder to overcome than physical barriers. It can be very hard to look at yesterday. I'm ultimately going to have to look at yesterday. But if I'm not ready to look at yesterday, it doesn't mean that I can't fix tomorrow. And fixing tomorrow alone is already enough to change Roa HaGezerah. And finally, Yonah himself. So Pasuk Perek Dalet, Yonah is incredibly upset. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, oh, why are you upset? And he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, this is what I knew this was going to happen. That happened in the Perek Gimel. They did Shuvah and you let them off and I'm so upset. He says, I'm done. I'm done. I don't want to see what's going to happen to Klal Yisrael after this. I'm done. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says in Pasuk Dalet, Hayteiv Charalach. You're so upset? Now, the Malbim points out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks a similar question in Pasuk Tes, after the Kikayon shrivels, and Yonah answers, Hayteiv Charalach HaKikayon. He says, you're so upset to the Kikayon? He says, yes, I'm very upset. I'm dying of dehydration because I lost my shade. I'm out in the desert and the Kikayon is gone. In Pasuk Tes, he responds. In Pasuk Dal, he didn't respond. Kadosh says, "Hey, Teiv Chalach, are you so upset?" And where is Yonah? Where is Yonah? So the Malbim has his own answer, but based on the Radak, he understands, "Hey, Teiv Chalach, Hey, Teiv." So the Radak says the simple answer is, he says he's asking, why does the word Tov fit in? So Radak says Kadosh Baruch Hu saying, do you think it's good to be upset about this? You think it's good. You think that this is injustice. Are you sure that you're right to be upset? Are you sure you're right to be upset? And the truth is, this isn't the only time the Yonah doesn't respond. Because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately explains to him, I have a different perspective than you do, we never hear Yonah answer. So it may well be that Yonah doesn't answer we don't know whether Yonah ever said, I get it. He had Akasha. Yonah had Akasha. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, there are things you don't, I have perspective that you lack. Are you so sure are you so convinced that you're right, that I'm wrong? And we don't hear Yonah say, I get it. Because perhaps one of the lessons of the tshuva of Yonah is, initially, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, go to Ninveh, he said, I don't think that's the right thing to do, and therefore I'm not doing it. The kasha wasn't resolved. It's not that in Paragimel, what becomes clear of the course of Paragdalid, it says not that in Paragimel, Yonah acted differently because now he understood why Hashem wanted to do it. No, he still has the kasha. And he respected the kasha, and he addressed the kasha with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. And it's not clear he ever fully got an answer that he was able to understand. But the change was, he had the capacity to say, I have a kasha, and I don't understand a Kaddish Baruch Hu, but I'm finite and he's infinite, and I can carry my kasha while I obey. And the capacity to be able to say, I'm not gonna ignore the kasha, but neither it's going to be an obstacle to my doing the right thing. That type of humility is one of the lessons of the tshuva of Yonah. And so these three tshuvos of the sailors, the people of Nineveh and of Yonah, godel koach tshuva. There's so many different people doing tshuva, and watching each of them gives us insight into what we can do in a meaningful way over the course of the coming weeks. Thank you so much.